Todd Spangler. He's a Detroit Free Press writer. He's with the Washington, D.C. staff. Todd, how are you?
I am very good, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's going on there? You got hurricanes coming through there, earthquakes. It's crazy in D.C.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that Irene is going to come up the Chesapeake Bay this weekend and blow the top off the Washington Monument, which now has a crack at the top. So we pray for the best.
All right. Well, let's talk about another monument. You wrote a great piece about Martin Luther King's new monument that was recently opened. Tell us about that experience. Tell me what you saw. And in looking at the photos to the story, it looked like it's quite moving.
It is quite moving. I went to this memorial on Monday, which was the first day it was open, ready to be critical of it, quite frankly. I had read all these things, how it was the statue was too severe, that it had a sort of communistic, socialistic feel to it. And I didn't find that at all, and certainly the people who were there didn't find it at all. I mean, certainly it's not just the welcoming Martin Luther King that you might think. There's a look of determination. There's a look of resolve on the man's face, and frankly, considering you know what he means to this country, that's appropriate.
All right, tell us about the memorial itself, what it's composed of, how big it is, what does it look like?
It's on about a four-acre site, and it's tucked in right against the tidal basin across the body of water from the Jefferson Memorial. So the statue of King looks across the tidal basin at Jefferson. There's a sitting area there and shaded by the Japanese cherry trees. It's a beautiful site. The statue itself is from a block of stone that appears to come out of two other blocks of granite. Those represent the mountain of despair that the stone of hope, which the statue is part of, comes out of. And that references part of his speech given 48 years ago this weekend.
All right. And it's pretty imposing from what I understand.
It is. It's about three stories tall. And it's wonderful to sit there under the cherry trees along with the benches. You can read inscriptions of some famous writings of King's and look up at it. And you can see it means a lot to the people who are coming down there, particularly African Americans.
All right. Were there a lot of people there at that opening day?
There were, but it wasn't overrun. It was sort of almost a soft opening, which makes a lot of sense. There were several thousand people there that day. It seemed to accommodate them well, but we weren't jammed in, which was a great sort of time to meet with people who were just everyday Americans who were coming down to see what this looked like and find out what they thought.
All right. I wanted to ask you about another story you wrote. I thought it was very intriguing, and it was titled, Should the Rich Pay More in Taxes? Truth Squatting the Coming Debate Over Cutting the Deficit. Talk about that story.
Well, what we were trying to look at with that story was just whether or not you see these arguments from Warren Buffett and others saying that the rich should pay more in taxes. And we were just trying to truth squad some of the things that were out there and do a question and answer kind of piece on how much do wealthier Americans pay and is it considered fair or not. And honestly, what we found, I mean, not that we're going to answer the question whether or not the wealthy should or should not pay more. I'm a reporter. That's not my job. But it is interesting to note that, you know, the people who make over $200,000 a year in this country, approximately a quarter of all the income made in this country, pay about 50% of the taxes already.
And that would lead you to believe that they think they've been getting enough hits.
I think that people who make over that amount might think that way. On the other hand, frankly, their share of income in the country has gone up, so maybe they're better qualified to pay more. So you end up in a position, and I think this is true when you talk to people who do make more money, a lot of them are perfectly willing to pay more. They just feel as though the money that they send into the federal government isn't going to the places it needs to go.
All right. And in a story in today's Free Press, we've talked about hard-hitting stories, the MLK Memorial, should the rich pay more taxes, and now this, Todd, that they assign you to, Michigan man faces prison after pleading guilty to illegally importing a polar bear.
Well, he didn't legally import it. He legally shot it. I mean, he legally shot and hunted it up there in extreme northeastern Canada. Actually, that wasn't assigned to me. I saw something on it yesterday and jumped on it myself because I thought it was interesting. What happened was this man went to Canada to legally hunt a polar bear, got all the permits he needed, went on a $12,000 guided hunt, and you know, he got his bear, he bagged his bear, but he knew he couldn't bring it back. So he had it taxidermied up there and stored across the border. And back in 2007, apparently, he decided he'd had it. He wanted his bear. So he took his sons across the border at Sault Ste. Marie and brought it back across by boat, had one of his sons meet him, and drove it back to near Grand Rapids. He got found out, and now he's pleaded guilty to doing something the federal government's not crazy about.
And he's going to prison.
Well, the fact is he could. But his lawyers tell me that that's unlikely. He's been cooperative all along. He has acknowledged his guilt in doing this, and it's unlikely he's going to go to jail.
You know what's interesting? Did they take the bear away from him?
They did, and it's in a warehouse somewhere, and we have no idea where it is.
I didn't know you could hunt polar bears. For some reason, I thought they were an endangered species.
They are, in that we have declared them an endangered species, and as of, I believe it's 2008, you can't import them from anywhere. I mean, you certainly can't hunt them and bring them back into the country. But there are places in other parts of the world where they say it's perfectly legal to hunt them, and the question is whether or not once you hunt them in that place, should you be able to bring them back.
And Todd Spangler is a writer for the Detroit Free Press. He works out of their Washington, D.C. Office, and you can go to freep.com and pull up all his great stories. Thanks so much, Todd.
Thanks, Tony. Have a great day.